Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast. The summer is moving quickly, and before you know it, it'll be time to report for training camp. This brand new series, which we are calling our training camp series, is designed to help you prepare for and take you through training camp. During this series, we will feature a number of FBS and FCS coaches who have all shared different ideas, processes, and thoughts on how to run and develop training camps. We try to get perspective on everything from how much conditioning to put into your players, to how they handle their installs, to how effectively communicate with players during what's really the hardest part of the entire football season. We hope you enjoy this series. Now let's send it over to today's guest. Welcome to USA Football's training camp series, and we continue on talking with coaches about some things that are going to really matter here a lot as we get this 2019 season kicked off and we get into our training camp. So joining me today from Catapult is DJ Callender. He's been on the podcast before. DJ, great to have you back here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Keith.
I have Coach Yusuf Shakur at Manatee High School from Florida, also a repeat performer on the podcast. Coach, great to have you back.
Thank you once again. I appreciate it.
And then first time joining us on the podcast is the Director of Applied Sports Science at Georgia Tech, Ryan Horton. Ryan's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Ryan, you know, just a little background on you. I've talked with DJ and Yusuf before a little on their background, but you and I had that Ohio Athletic Conference connection. You played at Otterbein College, and things really took off from there for you.
Played at Otterbein College, and as I was finishing up there, kind of went down to a strength conditioning clinic down at the University of Tennessee, where I met Chris Stewart, and Coach Stewart allowed me to come down and volunteer at Tennessee, and I basically stuck around until they either was going to kick me out the door or they were going to hire me on. And so I got hired on, and I was doing strength conditioning for about 12 years. And at Temple, we got the Catapult system in, and I got to take that over. And now at Georgia Tech, just kind of expanding on the whole sports science role that we're doing now here at Georgia Tech.
Well, we'll get right into this topic today, and a couple weeks back here, we had Kirk Frederick on from Union High School in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we were talking about his topic was preparing guys for week one, and he's got nothing like what you guys have at Catapult that tells you some of the specifics, DJ, but by and large, it's kind of the same philosophy of we need to build these guys up to the point that they're ready to go. And I think all three of you would agree, and I just want to get comments from each of you on kind of the change, I think, in the mentality of how we approach, especially this time of the year. I mean, we used to think about this traditionally as this was, and you go back to like Bear Bryant in the movie that they had like on ESPN, where, you know, training camp was like brutal. It was about like figuring out who was going to stick around, who was going to be the toughest. Well, you know, we have, you know, huge off-season programs now. We have a lot of things we do to build our culture and to get guys to buy in that way. So the focus has certainly moved away from that. And we are moving more and more towards being smart about how we prepare these guys for week one. So DJ, I'm sure you see it all the time that, as guys get into using Catapult and get into using data and analytics to help prepare their team in a better way, that there is that old school mentality that kind of gets shifted, even disappears, that the focus is now on training as smart as you can to prepare your team.
Yeah, Keith, as you said that, I kind of was running through the scenes from Remember the Titans in my mind, you know, the Denzel line, water is for cowards, and was just kind of chuckling. But, you know, I think what technology like Catapult has allowed coaches and football programs to do is really understand in a more objective manner what they're, you know, what type of load and what type of strain and what type of demands they're putting on their athlete's bodies, which then allows them, as you said, to train smarter, prepare smarter, make sure they're really getting these guys into an optimal stage for peak performance, as opposed to undertraining or overtraining and overloading. And there's not really a time of year where that's probably more critical than the summer, with camps and 2-a-days and 3-a-days and workouts and weight room sessions. So, you know, I'm sure Ryan and Coach Shakir have their own anecdotes and can kind of speak to that a bit further.
Yeah, Coach Shakir, you took over a program at Manatee here, and you know, it had a pretty storied history and a lot of success in the past, and kind of has fallen on hard times for a little bit. So you're bringing the program back, and you kind of have this new school approach to it too. You know, what are your thoughts on the direction things have moved, in, especially in terms of how people approach training camp now?
Oh, well, I totally agree with what Coach just said. I think it's all about being efficient, and I think it's just become more in depth. I think if you run a year-round program, and that's why we've always run a year-round program wherever I've been, is because of the fact that you don't have to focus as much on being elite at a certain time, because you're basically always kind of in shape. The kids never get out of shape. And I think that's the thing that helps the most. Now it's about, especially with Catapult, it's about optimizing their performance and making sure that you're peaking at just the right time. Or if you're maybe, you know, sometimes your body needs to change, the different things need to change to get a couple different results. And I think Catapult does a great job of monitoring, more importantly than anything else, especially as a high school coach, is monitoring the calorie intake. You know, how many calories have they burned? What expenditures? Because, you know, as in high school, we don't control the diets once they leave the school, or really sometimes at the school. So for us, it's a huge aspect for us, and it's a huge direction change as far as the shift from going from the old school style of, hey, let's push the kids hard. You know, a lot of that was based behind the fact that a lot of kids didn't do a lot of off-season training, but they had to be ready all of a sudden, maybe a 2 or 3 week period for a game.
Ryan, you grew up in Ohio, and summers in Ohio are nothing like the winters. I mean, they are hot, they are humid, and I'm sure you can remember back to your playing days of that, you know, quote-unquote grind, where your coaches were really going to work you. You had you know, two practice sessions, usually with a very short amount of time in between, as things weren't really regulated at the time. And the idea was like, we're just going to train harder than anybody, and that's how we're going to make ourselves better. That's how we're going to set ourselves apart. And distinctly different now to the situation you're in, and the move that's been made by the NCAA to eliminate 2-a-days and to get some days off in there physically for the players. So I think, you know, in talking to a few coaches here throughout the preseason, that actually has been accepted pretty well, that they do see a lot of the benefits of being smart about how we train. So your thoughts in what you've seen over the time here to really what you're in charge of right now with Georgia Tech.
I think you bring up a great point as to looking at camp, and camp has always been a you know, tough, you know, 3 weeks. But a lot of us are old enough to where back when we played, you know, and we had the 2-a-days, and then you had the third walkthrough late in the evening. And so when you look at it relative to what we remember, we look at camp now, and it's like, well, now it's easy because it's one practice and it's meetings. It's nothing like what it used to be. But I think when we brought Catapult in and we were able to put actual numbers and be able to compare to, okay, well, here's what a game looks like. You know, here's what a normal in-season Tuesday practice looks like. Well, here's what our first week of camp looks like. And you can kind of do that comparison to see exactly how tough, you know, that stretch of camp is, to then be able to go in and be able to make, you know, the adjustments that we wanted to make. Because at the end of the day, the best ability is availability. And if we can get guys through camp and get guys through camp healthy and go into week one of the season as healthy as possible, that puts us in the best position to be successful. And so I think, you know, like I said, to have those numbers to attach to a practice of player load and be able to compare to a game, to a different practice, to be able to do that tangibly, I think it's been a game changer.
Brian, as you prepare for camp here, and you have all these guys that you have to monitor, so the technology comes in to play big time for you in making things more efficient. As you guys get into camp, is there a ramp up for this? I know you guys at the college level, you have the ability to get them in the summer now and to work with them, but especially in terms of the amount of reps these guys get, right? And everybody's moved to high-tempo practices and those kinds of things, which I think, you know, are really good for the focus, and guys, you know, are shortening the amount of time on the field. But how much do you pay attention to the amount of reps guys are getting and how that affects them? And then, I guess, in a bigger part, I've seen more and more, you know, guys in the strength and conditioning field, you're just not there waiting for them to show up in the weight room. I mean, you guys are sitting down in meetings with coaches and trying to help them craft and create a better practice. So can you talk about, I guess, how all that kind of folds together right now at this time of the year?
So what we were able to start doing is once we had a year of data under our belt, and now we've got, you know, 2.5 years worth of data that we can look back on, we're able to take camp of what we've done the past couple years, what our loads have been, what our schedule and our calendar is going to look like this year. And so now that we know what camp looks like, once we get June under our belt, you know, we come back from that break in May, we get the guys back going in June. Well, then we are able to make a template basically and say, okay, here's our current loads right now for June. Here's what August is going to look like and what we need to be prepared for. And then we can take July and we can basically map out a template of, okay, here's what we want our loads to be the first week of July, second, third, fourth. So that way we do have that nice, you know, ramp right into camp. So what we're trying to avoid is that huge volume spike that they're going to see the first week of camp. So if we can kind of make that transition and create a bridge in July to make it a smooth transition to where they're prepared for what they're going to see that first week of camp. We saw some success last year with that a lot, as far as from an injury standpoint, of being able to reduce those injuries those first couple weeks of camp by trying to systematically prepare those guys for that volume that they were going to see that first week.
Coach Shakir, how has that applied to you at the high school level using this technology?
Well, it applies to us very much because of the fact that, like I said, diet is so closely related to performance. And for high school kids, and, you know, also for high school parents, it's just getting them to understand the level that they need to work at and the level they need to work at to be optimal. Like Coach just said, you know, availability is the best ability. And, you know, really helping these kids understand hydration and then replenishing of the fluids, and not only the fluids but also the solid foods inside of their body, especially, you know, for us being in Florida, you know, it's going to be 90 plus every day. You know, now, especially now, one thing that's different for us that has to be taken into account is camp is earlier now than it used to be in the past years. You know, it used to be kind of August 15th, that day was kind of the start. And then our first game, you know, our kickoff classes would be a lot of times the last week in August, and your first game wouldn't be till September. Well, now, you know, we're going to play 2 games already in September. August. And so for us, you know, the heat is a major factor for us, and recovery is a major factor as far as that. And, you know, also, you know, it, preventing injuries is so huge. That diet, I think a lot of people don't correlate, you know, having kids perform at a high level. You know, people always talk about that. But your diet is such an influence that it's how your body recovers and the rest component of it. And so we're testing those things and really just having such a large, how can I say it, influx in tempo compared to the summer and what you're doing in the summer. Because practice, when you start practice, becomes very competitive. And that's the adrenaline aspect that you don't take into a lot of account when you're training and when you're trying to, you know, get the kids ready for the summer practice as far as 2 days are concerned. And I think another thing you have to take in large account is that a lot of these kids really don't go without air conditioning for the most part. So for them, you know, you have to get that aspect into it also with thinking about having them ready to perform, because most weight rooms now have AC. You know, most buildings have AC. All cars now have AC compared to, you know, when some of us grew up, and most homes do. So a lot of these kids really aren't acclimated to the weather and acclimated to the level of intensity that they're going to be performing at a high intensity, especially some of your young kids that's knowing your program. And that's the biggest thing you really have to watch for. And so when you can monitor the kids and you can give the parents, you know, direct information of showing this is why they have to eat well and this is why the diet is so influential into performance and all of these aspects. I mean, you know, the kids also saying they're tired. You know, you can really judge and see where they really stand at.
Yeah, I think the data provided is huge, and I like that you're able to share that information with the parents and really help your guys who, you know, aren't finishing up with their stuff for the day and heading over to training table like they do at the college level. So taking a step back from the technology and, you know, what I was surprised with, and DJ, we'll talk about this towards the end, but it's actually very affordable and you can do some things with a few of these devices that would still make you immensely better than not having them at all. But I look to something like we talked about with Coach Frederick at Union, where, you know, he's really just made this the focus, you know, with or without the technology. I think you have to have that philosophy in place first, that this is the way we're going to do things. This is how we're going to look at how we train our players, how we manage their loads, how, you know, we are maximizing their performance and minimizing their risk of injury by just being smarter about how we do things. So, Ryan, as you look at, you know, technology aside, what are the key components here that coaches with or without this technology need to be looking at in order to make sure that their players are performing at an optimal level?
Well, I think, I think with or without the technology, I mean, we used to, even before we had Catapult, I mean, we would take stopwatches out of practice and we would time, the time between reps, and we would compare that to with the time between reps of a game to try to match the tempo of a game. We would, and it's a lot of it speaking to what Coach was saying, is, you know, you're going to practice your allotted amount of minutes of practice. You know, that's pretty regulated now as far as how much you can practice. So what are you doing in between practices to make sure that you are recovering from every practice, you know, whether it's, you know, eating and getting the proper nutrition, like Coach is saying, making sure guys are eating breakfast, making sure guys are hydrating. We weigh our guys in and we weigh them out before and after every practice to make sure that they're replenishing the fluids that they've lost, from that practice, from the previous practice, to where that can be a red flag immediately right away. If you have a guy, you know, some guys are heavy sweaters, and we're going to have guys that will lose 8, 9, 10 pounds out of practice. That's kind of on the rare side, but it happens. But the key is to making sure that they're properly hydrated going into the next practice. So if all of a sudden that guy that lost that weight, if he's still weighing in light, you know, the following day, well, that's a red flag where, you know, that guy didn't get properly hydrated from the practice before. And you know, if you're going to back out to another hot day, that's a huge, huge concern. And so a lot of those different, you know, techniques to making sure the guys are recovering from one practice to the next, because, you know, camp is back-to-back-to-back-to-back days. And if guys aren't doing those things to take care of their body, you know, it can spiral downhill really, really, really fast.
I'm interested in what you said about the tempo and matching the tempo there. I know we've gone to, in practice, trying to get as many reps as we can in as fast a period of time as we can. And I think the difference between the game, because I did a study of this myself, really, to be able to simulate but know what we needed to do in terms of communication between a play. What was the real time between the whistle blowing and the ball being snapped? And, you know, depending on the distance down the field, it was usually somewhere between 9 and 11 seconds at least at our level at Division III. And You know, I think it's slightly slower for high school. It might be a little bit faster at the higher levels where, you know, there are those teams pushing it and they have their own ball boys flying down the sideline. But in going back to what Coach Friedrich and I talked about was the idea of early on, like they were very conscientious about how many reps in a row are we going to have these guys do? And they actually, you know, created that situation both for their individual periods, their group and team, where, you know, they might start with, as an example, 4 reps. Like, we're only going to run 4 reps in a row at a high tempo before we get these guys off. And we're going to build it up to the point we're ready for week 1 kickoff, you know. And you see less and less of those longer time-consuming drives across football anymore as teams have moved to fast-paced offense, high-tempo offense. But the point being, you monitor that. Is there any, you know, have you looked at anything and said, hey, coach, you know, you guys are doing this in practice. This is actually how it works in a game. Because I think in practice, you know, what we found is that we're going faster than we actually could in a game. What's your thought on that, and how has that come into player conversations at all?
Well, as far as we call them racks. So if it's a 4-play rack or a 7-play rack, of however many plays, like, that particular unit is going to run in a row during that period of practice. And we'll vary it up just because, you know, it's going to be varied in the game. You're going to have 3-play drives. You're going to have 8-play drives. And so we'll vary that up a little bit. One of the interesting things that we did find, though, with Catapult is we were trying to, in an effort to try to make practice as efficient as possible. So to make it to where, you know, when guys are moving and guys are working, that there's a purpose behind that movement and that distance that they're having to cover, is that we found, you know, doing longer play racks, of doing a rack of maybe 6 plays in a row, is a lot more efficient than doing shorter, like, 3-play racks, because you're eliminating that running on and off the field and transitioning to different areas of the field. And we were able to cut yardage off of our guys' legs by manipulating how we put together some of those racks of plays in different periods of practice and just making practice more efficient. So that way it's not a matter of, because we try to look for ways of, we don't want to practice less. It's not about practicing less. It's about practicing more efficient. So to get the maximum amount of productivity off of the amount of yardage that guys are going to cover at practice. So how can we make everything as efficient as possible so we can be as productive as possible? And that's one of the things that we came across with Catapult, that I don't know if, you know, it, when you look back on it, it seems kind of obvious, but I don't know if it would have ever really been as obvious as it was without the numbers to be able to show, that happened.
Yeah, I think that is very interesting that, you know, you look at it that way, because there is all that time on and off the field, running on and off the field, and that does accumulate as well. As you were talking, I wondered at all if you guys have been able to find any kind of fit of efficiencies in the special teams part of this, because those are longer distance plays, right? We're not talking about a run play that goes 4 yards. I mean, that ball or that kick is on a punter kick is going down the field a far distance. Guys are running back to block. Guys are running forward to cover. And then a lot of what I've seen, at least in the traditional way, I know a lot of people have started to move away from this, is turn it around, let's go the other way. You know, we've got our 10 minutes. We're going to get as many reps in as we can of this, you know, this punt. But, you know, the workload changes. That's not how it happens in a game. Have you guys found any ways to create a more efficient special team segment of practice utilizing Catapult?
So I mean, we'll do some different things from a special team standpoint. We will, you know, we don't necessarily run, you know, every punt or every kickoff, you know, all the way through. And what I mean by that is, you know, you don't have to do a complete punt cover to work on, you know, the first, you know, the blocking portion of the punt. You know, you don't have to do a full kickoff to work on kickoff timing. And so there's things like that we'll do to try to, you know, not crush those guys, you know, during those periods. because a punt period or a kickoff period or a kickoff return period, those periods can easily be the most taxing and most crushing parts of a practice if you allow them to be. And so we try to just be as smart as we can with, you know, how much we're opening those guys up and grinding those guys during those periods of practice.
Yusuf, what have you guys been able to do in terms of that? Have you found any data that's helped you create more efficient practices like Ryan's been talking about here at the high school level?
Almost definitely, because one thing that we tried to change and adjust was just the proximity of practicing where we do things. You always look at where you work your drills at, but we always try to push, put our skill guys, because in high school, you know, your skill guys just don't run a lot. And that's just, I think that's at every level. You just try to make sure you set up everything for the least amount of movement in between drills and in between stations. I think that's very huge as far as, you know, eliminating things in practice where you're not being as successful as far as just moving from drill to drill and station to station, just having good proximity. Because, you know, your skill guys may be working on one side of the field and all of a sudden you do your team drill at the other side. Well, you know, a lot of people do that, you know, because, all right, well, the linemen don't have to move as far. But I think you just have to look at the guys that are moving the most and getting the most taxed in what you're trying to do. For us also, we do basically segments and special teams. We do, like, the first 5 yards, the first 10 yards, and then we'll do that's the first four. Then the second portion will be, like, the last 5 yards. So we break it down into phases. Then we'll do, like, one time as far as a whole rep from beginning to end, but we try to do, like Coach said, you try to do a lot of segmented special team reps to save those guys' legs as much as possible. A lot of times your special teams guys are going to be your linebackers, your running backs, your wide receivers, your defensive backs, especially throughout your practice, so you just try to save them as much as possible as far as movement is concerned, and especially explosive movement and sudden quick twitch movements. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't look at is when the offensive linemen, I think that's another aspect that we take for it is the impact we look at with our linemen. And we look at how many impacts have they had in practice because of the fact that if it's registering on catapult, then it's definitely registering with their bodies.
Yeah, that's an interesting point as well. Ryan, is that something you guys spend a lot of time monitoring? I'm sure. Is the amount of contact these guys get?
For sure. You know, that is that's something we look at daily for all of our linemen is how many, you know, we know how many impacts that they're going to have in a game. And so that's something we absolutely monitor, especially on our heavy contact days, like a Tuesday and a Wednesday, of how many impacts that those guys are hitting. Because just like, I mean, Coach hit the nail on the head, you know, if it's registered on catapult, it's definitely registered on their bodies. And so so that's something we definitely keep a close eye on.
So Twitter allows for you to have some interesting conversations, and one of the ones that really got going this summer was this whole idea of conditioning. And there's certainly that old school approach where, you know, practice ends and you get them on the line and do gassers or 40s or whatever it might be. I can remember when I played in high school, we did something called – they called it the Pittsburgh drill. I have no idea why. They might have got it from Pittsburgh, but it started with tens, right? And it moved all the way up to hundreds. And at the end, you were doing 1,000s. So it started with like 110, 220s, 330s, all the way up to 1,000s at the end. And sometimes for them to be efficient, they'd have us jog all the way back to the line. So it was just brutal. And I mean, you know, when we were freshmen, when we were doing these, And not only that, we had to like jog a quarter mile to practice on sidewalks to get to our practice field. And it wasn't walk, it was that. And so no surprise, like after 3 weeks, everybody had shin splints. And so you shake your head now, like we should have known better back then, but now we do. And we have a lot of data now to back it, especially with something like catapult. So there's two schools of thought I'm seeing. There's the old school that, hey, we need to line them up at the end of practice and do this no matter what. And then there's the other guy saying, well, our practices go so fast and there's so much tempo that as long as we're, you know, as players handling that the right way, we don't have to condition at the end of practice. So What's the reality? What's the data showing us in a typical, and, you know, obviously we have to go at each of your practices, so a high school level and the college level. Let's start with you, Ryan. You know, at the college level, where's the reality of what we have to do in terms of that extra conditioning outside of what we're already doing in practice?
In my opinion, it is a if you're practicing the way that you're wanting to play in a game, it is one of the absolute most unnecessary things in the world to line guys up at the end of practice and conditioning. We base everything we do through the practice week from day to day based upon what the game load is going to be. And so we start with the game load and we work backwards, and each day of the week is a certain percentage of what that game is going to be. And that's kind of how we set our week up. And so, again, going back to being as productive as possible with how you're using the guy's legs, to line them up and literally just have them run mindlessly for no reason is extremely, in my opinion, unproductive. Take that time and run through more routes. Take that time and, you know, run through more schemes or anything. Is more productive than just having them line up mindlessly run, because we know we have the numbers, so we know how much they're working over the course of that 2-hour practice. And so to have them line up and condition just for the sake of conditioning, it's just horribly inefficient.
Coach Shakir, how about on your side of things? What have you found at the high school level with what you've done with Catapult?
Well, what we do with we were never really a big conditioning team as far as, you know, just running guys. We used to be a team that, you know, we did at the end of practice kind of year. We just wanted quick bursts, you know, just quick bursts, explosive bursts. We just wanted to train our legs at that time, you know, because we were trying to correlate it to fourth quarter aspects and just having a quick burst and quick movement. So we never really ran long. We did like 20s, you know, we just wanted to train the kids, you know, just to train their bodies to have a burst at the end. But we've totally changed. We actually start our practice. We stretch, we get loose, and then we start our practice with what we call tempo striders. You know, just kind of get their bodies loose, get their bodies open with that aspect. And what we do, really why we do it at the beginning of practice, is the fact that we want to have a little small bit of fatigue so we can focus. And that's just how we train our kids to focus, because kids, I think it's so huge to teach kids how to focus. Practice should be about focus and attention to detail. I don't think it's about, you know, beating kids up and, you know, just being as tough as possible. I think it's about being as efficient as possible. And when the people become inefficient is when they become a little tired. So I think that we started Striders for two reasons: to get a little bit of sweat going, because that's when attention and detail starts to fall off, but it also loosens the body up and gets them ready. And then for the rest of practice, they're just mentally focused on doing the things to get better. So that's how we look at condition. We just look at it as we are doing that, getting the practice to get warmed up and to make sure we can get them to focus more, because kids aren't, and players aren't going to become better at something. They're not going to become more focused at something because you do something a lot, because you do it. You have to get them in situations like they're going to be in the game, because you want them to focus and do something on third and fourth down in the third and fourth quarter. Well, how can you get their bodies into that situation on a daily basis so they can be efficient at that moment and at that time?
Coach Horton, any thoughts or recommendations in that regard? And thoughts, I guess, of moving from that dynamic into not just the condition to condition, but as something, as Coach said, kind of to prep the body for what they're going to go to. And, you know, in some ways, I think, yeah, you get a little bit of that physical fatigue maybe gets going a little bit. But thoughts on that approach?
So we do, yeah, we do a warm-up as well. We have a flex period, you know, which I think is warranted and needed. And then one of the things that we'll have, one of our early periods in practice, is we have it's a monster period, like the Monster Energy. It's a monster period. And so the offense will run, they'll run basically plays on air, and it's super high tempo, and it's, you know, it's on air, and it's line up, run the ref, reset, next play, kind of like a 2-minute offense type deal. and it's high tempo, high rep to get those guys moving and running through. And then the defense will do the same thing. It's basically like a blitz on air period, to where they sprint out, they get the call, they run the rep, and then the next group is right behind them sprinting onto the field and running, and it's all on air. So it's offense running basically plays on air, and it's the defense running plays on air. But it's a super high tempo period. Like Coach was saying with the tempo runs, you know, to get them sweating, to get them going, to get that, you know, to get that CNS woken up a little bit. And so that's one of the things that we'll do early on in practice, that kind of simulates, you know, what Coach was saying with like the tempo runs.
Well, guys, some great ideas here today. I love that monster period idea. I can imagine coaches listening to this will pick up on that for sure. But great ideas with or without the technology. I think the interesting thing I've found in being able to talk to Catapult and DJ is that the technology is a lot more accessible than we might think. I think, you know, a lot of coaches say, Catapult, that's what they use at the college level. I can't afford that. But DJ, if you could speak to, I guess, those hesitations with this, because you and I discussed on the last one that there's ways you can do this with just a few units to get going, and it becomes very affordable for a program.
Yeah, Keith. So, you know, we talked about this a little bit last time, but Catapult, you know, they started in Australia back in 2006, and that concept of, you know, athlete monitoring and performance data and analytics was so new that, you know, it really stuck at the elite level, professional teams, large Division I programs, because they obviously have the staff and the budget to be able to leverage it, and the education and expertise to get, you know, a lot out of it. Well, Catapult a few years back said, hey, you know, how can we really start to open this up and democratize it a bit and say, hey, we want to take this performance data, we want to take this technology and make it available for coaches at smaller colleges, high school coaches, even looking at other sports with, you know, youth clubs and academies, where they have a lot of athletes and they have a lot of coaches, and they could really take advantage of this type of technology. So through, you know, acquisitions that we made and through R&E and making the software a little bit more intuitive and some of the data points a little bit more digestible and just making the system really more plug and play for that level, we were able to kind of bring it down in price and make it more reasonable. And as a result, you know, we've really started to see a pretty good uptick in teams at that level I've just described, kind of the amateur level, really starting to run with this and take it on. And, you know, my message to coaches is always, you know, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You know, it doesn't have to be, hey, I need to get 80 or 90 units, one for every single player. I need a full-time strength coach. Like, you know, if that was, if we did all or nothing with our approach, like, we'd probably very rarely, you know, do much of anything or jump in and take on new initiatives. So that's kind of my message is, you know, there's ways to do it that are easy enough on time and resources and staff at the same time on budget to really get this kickstarted and really start to get some value from it. And I think as you heard Coach Horton talk about earlier, like one of the cool things about this technology is the longer you have it, the more data you collect, really the more meaningful the outcomes can be and the more reliable some of those changes can be that you're trying to affect with your team and with your players. So that would be my message is, you know, get in touch with us, find out what the options are for your program. We're happy to work with coaches and programs, you know, of all sizes. And I think there's a lot of value to getting started and starting somewhere, even if it's, you know, on a smaller scale.
DJ, I want to thank you for taking the time again and being on the podcast. It was great. Thank you for sharing all of your information.
Yeah, absolutely, Keith. I appreciate you having me on, and I know hopefully these, you know, the insights from Coach Shakir and Coach Horton are valuable as we head into, you know, really the season right around the corner.
Coach Shakir, best of luck to you and Manatee as you guys get ready here for the 2019 season, and thanks for joining us again on the podcast.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Coach Horton, our Cardinals and Yellow Jackets face off September 14th. It's actually the OAC opener this year, week one of OAC play. So I'll be watching that one, and I'll certainly be watching your Yellow Jackets at Georgia Tech this season. I appreciate you taking the time and being here on the podcast and sharing some great information with coaches.
Appreciate you having me on. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please check out all we're doing on Twitter at our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling at footballdevelopment.com. If you register there with your email address, you can get access to our shoulder tackle system, the entire system, as well as 3 free videos of your choice, either from advanced tackling or from our contact system, which is blocking and defeating blocks. This is some of the best stuff, some cutting edge stuff, I think, that you're going to find is very efficient and effective in the way you teach your players. And there's a lot of drills here that help you improve that skill year-round. Check it out at footballdevelopment.com. Check out our coaches' notes on usafootball.com. Go to the resources tab for development and training. Our coaches' notes are given to us by coaches around the country, state champs, some of the NCAA leaders. Those guys have been doing a great job in putting that together in our tips format, which is teach, install, and problem solve. And in there, we also have further review, which we allow our clips to be downloadable, and you can download those and put them into your Huddle. No need for an extra subscription to a Huddle page. So check those out. And as always, go to blogs.usafootball.com for our show notes, our analysis, articles, and coaching. Finally, if you're enjoying the podcast, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. It really helps out the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.